Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault. The following presentation takes place at the 2009 Minnesota Summit to Prevent Sexual Violence. Dr. Sharon Cooper from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill School of Medicine, discusses why the environment in which children are raised matters and how today's conditions are a perfect storm.
This is such an important topic, and I'm very happy to be able to hopefully bring some enlightenment to you about it, the perfect storm. This perfect storm of a shockless society, of sexual violence, and internet addiction, normalized sexual harm, technology improvements, parental disconnect for sure. As a pediatrician, I see these kinds of dynamics very often in my office, and we'll be talking today about why it is the environment matters and how it is that we are in a perfect storm. So let me just bring up the point of a concern that we have when we think about this issue, the whole process of 25 years from now, what will life be like? Well, 25 years from now, researchers will speak of the historic mental behavior of imagining a scene, sketching it by hand, and sharing the concept in something called an art gallery. That will be a historical phenomenon, not something done at that time. 25 years from now, sociologists will refer to an odd behavior of people gathering for conversation over coffee. An anthropologist will describe the rare human behavior of youth to actually talk to each other at school, rather than transmit their thoughts using hand-eye coordination devices. That is already happening now. I have so many of my patients who tell me I would never speak to him at school, but we talk all the time by text messaging. How fast are we moving in our society? My gosh. Well, telephones took 71 years for them to reach 50% of households, radios 28 years, cable TV 15 years, cell phones 14 years, CD players 11 years, DVD players 7 years, MP3 players 6 years. How long did it take for you to get your iPhone? Let me tell you, as a pediatrician, I learn about a lot of technologies in my office because I have a developmental pediatric practice as well as forensic pediatrics, and many times my patients come in not wanting me to examine their ears. Have you ever been there? And as my children are crying and very upset when I take out the otoscope because they know it's going to be all downhill from here, their parents whip out their iPhone and they put on Toy Story on the app's application. And my patients, who are three, pick it up and put it next to their nose, and I can do anything. In the lingo of the Web 2.0 society, we're now going to talk about the difference between portrait and landscape. Now, for those of you who use a computer, and I think everybody here does, there is this concept regarding how your image is going to appear as to whether or not you want it to be in portrait or whether or not you want it in landscape. So we're going to be talking then today about the difference between portrait and landscape. So, portrait. A portrait reflects your self-image. Recent studies have revealed that narcissism is on an extreme rise in our country. It was studied 25 years ago, and the incidence of narcissism has increased by 30%. We have terms such as Generation Me and Generation X and other types of terminology that really say it's all about me and you name the game. And the term sex sells has never been as meaningful as it is today, I think. It's role playing that has become the walk of life in video games, in virtual communities, in online chat, and in the real world. And it starts with our children very, very young. No longer are little toddler pageants really focused on children looking like toddlers. They look like adult women in toddler pageants now. The clothing that's sold for them are not toddler clothing. They're clothing for adult women. Recognizing that this is becoming how our children are growing up is part of that portrait. The sexualization of children and sexual violence prevention is important when children are depicted as sexual objects. A percentage will begin to see this as their portrait in life. I am a sexual object. The American Psychological Association stated this very well in their task force report that said that children are now beginning to believe that their only value is in their sexiness, not in their athletic abilities, not in their academic skills, not in their artistic skills. And this leads to a self-portrait of sexual objectification. And if we talk about prevention, this is one of the key turnarounds that we as a society and as communities have to think about. How do we help our children not see themselves as sexual objects? It will not happen passively. We have to take action in order to make that change. This is a very interesting book, The Sexualization of Childhood, and I find it to be very thought-provoking and one that is a wake-up call for all of us, because just as the APA spoke of this fact, we can see it every day. Look at Cosmo Girl, an interesting magazine, but I'll just show you this one Cosmo Girl, of which many of them are just like this. What are the key issues? Well, one of them, my ex posted topless pics of me on MySpace. Here's another lead article. Why is one boob bigger than the other? Now, you know, as a pediatrician, I know the answer to that, but now it's on the cover of Cosmo Girl. And then finally, hooking up do's and don'ts, what guys reveal. So it's not just putting the responsibility of ownership on girls. It's also understanding the role that boys have and the role that boys believe is their portrait now in life, not just a portrait of being a good friend. Portraits include a lot of things that we see in role playing.
We're becoming increasingly atomized. We're all becoming isolated.
There are so many people involved in this. Your brother might be a gamer. Your mom might be a gamer.
The syndicate started as a guild. It has developed into a virtual community.
Humans want to be more than what they are. And we are driven to be more than what we are.
A lot of players have what they perceive as dead-end jobs. And they log on to these worlds, and suddenly there's someone with power.
It's a strange phenomenon, the obsessive drive that I think, you know, semi to truly hardcore MMO players have.
Forget dinner, let's just do this. This is fun.
We all have our demons. We all have our hobbies.
If one of us had the day off, we would just spend the entire day.
My priorities are her and soon to be.
I knew I was sick from playing it. I knew I had to stop 14, 16 hours a day easily. I'd fall asleep in front of the computer, wake up, keep going. I kept playing. My whole life just fell apart. So I wanted to just kill myself.
There was always this very definite line that neither one of us crossed. It was always just a little in-game flirtation. Something happened, and I didn't notice. Now I'm in love, definitely. So we still have to meet in reality. Just a few more days.
Yes, I'm very excited.
I want you to think about role-playing and MMORPGs, massively multiplayer online role-playing games. If there is one thing that I think is changing our society dramatically, it is video games. The video game technology, and especially massively multiplayer online video games. There are beginning to emerge more and more reports about web addiction, but it's much, much more than that. It's much more than that. It's really about taking on an alternative life and how that life is more desirable than the life you're in so it can become a reality to you. I'll be talking to you a little bit about some of the places where people are. And as a forensic pediatrician, I'm so now focused on this particular pastime and behavior in adults, because I've just testified in my fourth child homicide associated with parents who were addicted to massive multiplayer online video games. Two children were killed when they were battered to death by fathers who were upset when they were interrupted from playing their games, and two children starved to death while their mothers played massively online video games. And so role-playing is... It's amazing to me when I talk to youth and or adults about their video gaming activities. Usually it presents with school problems in my clinic. And as they begin to talk about the child not sleeping and tell me, why is your child not sleeping? I don't know. You know, I get up and sometimes he's playing video games on the internet and it's 2:00 in the morning and he's 9 years old. There are already 8 countries that have special camps set aside for children who are addicted to video games. The first was China, and these special camps sometimes require 6 months of treatment in order to help children get past the whole issue of video gaming. Kids in a virtual world are yet another component of things for us to be thinking about. In 2006, 16% of children between 3 and 17 were internet users in virtual worlds, went up to 24%, 34%, 42%, and the projection is up to 53% in 2011. 53% of children who will be living their lives as avatars online, not in a real life, but what does that do as far as sexuality is concerned and sexual health? How does it affect the portrait? Well, we know that there's a permanent distortion of the portrait when you have been a victim of a sexual crime. And when you've been a victim of a sexual crime in the real world, sometimes you escape to a virtual world. On the other hand, you can also become a victim of sexual crime in a virtual world, which can make you at higher risk for victimization in the real world. This is not one of my patients, but I put this in to tell you about one of my patients, a young girl who was a child sexual abuse victim by a stepfather who coerced her to make numerous videos of herself dancing nude and then performing sexual acts with him, which he made into marketable DVDs and for which he extorted her for 4 years of her life from the time she turned 13, carrying these DVDs with him in his long-distance truck and saying, if you don't do what I tell you to do sexually for me, I will see to it that these DVDs get sold on the internet. It was a very challenging case because when the SBI agents first came to my office and said, we have a case of self-exploitation, is how they put it to me. I said, really? Tell me about it. And they said, well, you know, here's this young girl. She's about 13, and she's dancing nude in front of a camera, and she says this stuff like, my dad, he sleeps really deep, and I'm doing this to get even with him. And then at a certain point, she walks into another room where, oh, by the way, the camera follows her, which doesn't sound like self-exploitation to me unless it's a robotic camera. She goes into another room, and there's her father lying sleeping innocently on the floor, where she then performs a sexual act on him, which clearly he did not want, of course, because that's that cognitive distortion that sex offender treatment specialists tell us all the time, that cognitive distortion that says, I didn't want her to do that. She just did it and forced herself upon me. When I said to the SBI agent, I only have one question. Did the father wake up? And when the answer was no, I thought, I don't really think this is a self-exploitation case. How do males see themselves? The portrait that our children are dealing with today is that monogamy is passé. How many times do we see our girls thinking that it's really normal for me to be one of many girlfriends to this one boy on the playground? How about that? In a generation of heavily marketed gun violence and violence against women, sexual assault and exploitation is almost a rite of passage. This is how you get over. And also commercial sexual exploitation of children, the new term that we use for prostitution, commercial sexual exploitation, is not gender specific. And it may or may not masquerade as an entrepreneurial endeavor. We know that boys who are being marketed on the streets are not always marketing themselves. In fact, very often they are being marketed by someone else in this process.
Chairman Whitfield, ranking member Mr. Stupak, and other members of the committee, my name is Justin Berry, and I am 19 years old. I am here to speak about a danger facing this nation's children, one that threatens not only their emotional health, but their physical safety. This danger is internet child pornography, particularly involving the use of inexpensive web cameras, which are used by adult predators to exploit children. I speak from experience. For 5 years, beginning when I was 13 years old, I operated a pornographic website featuring images of myself loaded onto the internet by webcams. I was paid by more than 1,000 men to strip naked, masturbate, and even have sex with female prostitutes while on camera.
Let me talk for a minute about how a youth develops a self-portrait of, I bring it upon myself. I did this myself. I am now, for the last maybe 4 years, working a lot in commercially sexually exploited children. And it's interesting to me when children say to me, I met him and I told him I wanted to make money for him on the streets. He took my picture and put it on Craigslist, and I posed for it. So it's really all my fault. The same was true here with Justin Berry. This is him testifying before Congress, and I had the opportunity to testify just before him to try to help our congressional lawmakers understand the concept of a compliant victim, a person who has been groomed to finally take actions that are going to respond to the careful seduction that occurs with individuals who meet them online. Dr. David Finkelhor and the Crimes Against Children's Research Center in New Hampshire tells us that the average amount of time that a cyber enticer will talk with a youth online is close to 6 months before ever any kind of sexual actions occur. And I'm sorry, but if you and I were talking to somebody online every day, 4 to 6 times a day, would it take us 6 months to meet them? Probably not, especially if we thought we were in control, which is how children are often led to believe in these situations. It's really interesting about this whole issue of the portrait and how you see yourself. Thousands of young sweet cell sex in a study recently that just came out, in fact, in 2004. It was first done in 2004 and came out again in 2009. And it showed that 43% of youth between 16 and 25 believe that getting paid for sex is acceptable. And the internet contacts between these young people were found to be laden with sexual overtones as well as outright sexual propositions. And when the girls received these kinds of requests, they were highly explicit. But then when girls start sexting, when they start sending images of themselves that are highly sexualized, the long-term response, however, is not so good. That self-portrait becomes a lot less positive and another component of long-term victim implication. So what about this portrait? What is affecting it? Well, there's nature, there's nurture, there are neuronal issues, and even neuroplasticity. The research from 2001 that lets us know that the brain is not really complete when you are a youth, not until you're almost 23 years of age, and that part of the brain, the blue part that finally becomes mature, is that prefrontal cortex, the home, I often say, of common sense, the home of impulse control, the home of anger, the home of emotional responses. That part is not yet mature. And every time I ever say this, not to groups such as you, but a much, much less savvy group, there's this real moment of BGO that comes, that I can see little things floating above the head. You know, a BGO, that's a blinding glimpse of the obvious. Right. In addition to a brain that is not mature, we have a body that is, don't we? We see, of course, that children are certainly sexually maturing about 10, for every 10 years, they are sexually maturing about 1 year earlier. So back in the 60s, when Dr. Tanner first looked at sexual maturation and he saw that the onset of puberty began, say, around age 13 or so for some girls, we are now down to breast development beginning at age 9. And the fact that most girls are pretty completely sexually mature by the age of 14. Add to that mixture of nature, nurture, neuronal, and neuroplasticity is the extremely exploding research on mirror neurons in the brain. Now, the last time I checked on Dr. McCollum on PubMed and looking at mirror neurons, there were now 776 articles in the medical literature on mirror neurons. Those parts of the brain, and they are scattered around the brain, that lead us to believe that when we see something, for the few minutes that we see it, our brain will convince us that we are experiencing it. And that's not hard to grasp. Think of the last time you went to a really scary movie. And as the scary scene got scarier, what did your body do? Your heart started getting faster. You started sitting closer up on your seat. Your hands might have grasped the arms a little bit more. You're thinking, why did I come here? And then there's that moment when the really scary event occurs. Remember Psycho back in those days, remember? The curtain and when that happens, all of a sudden, even you will go just like that for just a second. And why does your body react that way? Because of those mirror neurons that convince you that you are experiencing what you see. So fast forward that now to how much our children and adults, not just children, and adults are seeing on the internet. And the kinds of things that they see on the internet, and frankly, the kinds of things that they see on cable TV as well. And why then are we surprised at our college students and their new whole thought process of what constitutes a relationship? The research from Laura Stepp is very compelling, and it involved the alma mater of this guy, Duke University, where she went to talk to co-eds at several schools about, tell me how you establish your sexual relationships now that you're out of high school, and their response is being that, you know, when you go to an expensive school, your parents have spent a lot of money. Everybody's talked about how you have to have your education, so I'm putting all my mental energy into that. I do not have time for the emotional havoc of having to try to have a boyfriend. So instead, I just go to the fraternity parties or whatever parties there are on Friday night. I intentionally overdrink so that I don't really have to hold myself accountable. I hook up with someone, typically going to his place, and have a sexual encounter. And the next day, I get up and go back to my dorm, and many times, I don't even know what his name is. This is what hooking up is. And in case you don't know that now, you do. And yet, here are our youth and young adults who are developing these types of sexual thought processes while we continue to generate more and more of those mirror neuron reactions with younger and younger and younger children. The landscape, as compared to the portrait, is a landscape of technology and media and advertising where children are the natives and we are the immigrants. Would you not agree? How to understand this landscape in the prevention of sexual violence is one of our tasks at this conference. Remember Hannah Montana? I liked Hannah Montana. I thought she was really cool, but I didn't think it was so cool in Washington State earlier this year when several girls in a school, sixth grade girls in a school, made a movie, a video movie with Hannah Montana's music, a Disney music, as the background of this movie about a child in their classroom named Piper whom they wanted to kill. You remember when this was on YouTube? And that these were sixth graders who put the movie about the 10 ways to kill Piper on YouTube. And imagine the cyberbullying that Piper experienced knowing that there were kids in her classroom. But also consider the fact that here's Miley Cyrus, really quite a role model for the American girl, if you will, who then made her rite of passage thanks to Vanity Fair. Her image was in the walkway out there. And I thought, gee, this isn't how I would like to see Miley Cyrus depicted. And this is not how I like to see her depicted with her father. It gives me overtones. It just has, you know, the types of overtones that would make me feel uncomfortable. The whole Girls Gone Wild phenomenon used to be something as if it were the girls who were gone wild, but it's not the girls who've gone wild. It's what people have done to depict them in this manner. Online dating has its ongoing risks when we think about it. Here's a girl, 14, who was gang raped on an internet date. She went to meet a person that she had met online and brought another friend with her, but when she got there, there were a gang of 5 men, all 18-year-olds, who gang raped her. My very first child pornography case I must share with you was several years ago that I ever testified in was actually an adult sexual assault case. That's how it started out. A woman who met a man online, they talked for a period of time, they both traveled to a different city and met for dinner. During the dinner, she was trying to have control of the situation, so she was the one who had decided to book a hotel room. They had already been talking for a long time, but she was not feeling so comfortable. And she said, well, we can go to the room, but let's just talk. I really think we need a little more time to talk in real life. And he said, sure, that's fine. But once he got her into the hotel room, he barricaded the door, and he brutally assaulted her for 6 hours. She had left her contact information where she was with her mother. And she told her mother, if you don't hear from me by such and such a time, come and get me. And so her mother did, with the police. They got into the hotel room. Her daughter was brutally battered. I looked at her facial x-rays 3 weeks later, and she still had facial swelling and fractured bones in the face. And how did this turn out to be a child pornography case? Because when law enforcement went back to look at the internet chat between these two people on his computer, they found also child pornography on his computer. And so recognizing the correlation between the kinds of sexual interests that you may develop when you are in an online situation will help you understand things better. Online grooming, to me, is a public health concern. To me, it's a public health concern. Because when youth meet predators on an average of 2 times, twice, and have sex with them before they're ever rescued after a person has groomed them online, according to the research of Finkelhorn-Wolak, it is a preventable form of sexual violence, one that we should be talking about with parents as well as with youth. Here is such a youth who's testifying before our Congress.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hello, thank you for inviting me to speak today. My name is Alicia Kozakiewicz. A Pittsburgh resident, I am 19 years old and a sophomore in college. And for the benefit of those of you who don't know, don't remember those headlines, I am that 13-year-old girl who was lured by an internet predator, transported across state lines to Virginia. In fact, not so very far from here, and enslaved by a sadistic pedophile monster. The authorities told my parents that the odds were 1,000,000 to 1 against my recovery. But I was the exception. I got the miracle. I was rescued. So why me? Because I was blessed by the simple fact that I live in Pittsburgh, where one of the very best cybercrime task forces was created. And because I was enslaved in Virginia, where one of the best Internet Crimes Against Children task force, or ICATS, exists. Because they had the training, the knowledge, and the expertise to find that needle in the haystack. That was a lost little girl. That was me. Because they had the cooperation of another fine ICAC team here in Virginia. Because they were there. I am here. They are the only reason that I am here in front of you today. But I want you to know that I am not up here alone. Beside me, there are so many young girls whose stories will never be heard. Because they are dead, possibly enslaved, or just too terrified to speak out. When I speak, what I say is for all of us who exist in pain and fear and sometimes even shame, and for those of us who have been silenced by the grave.
Now, this victim, Alicia Kozakiewicz, is a bit of a national spokesperson, and she talks about how it was for her to have spoken with a person online for almost 6 months. And it started with another person who posed as another 13-year-old girl, who became her very best friend and who eventually introduced her as her best friend to a guy who really understood her, Christine. Of course, Christine was a 46-year-old man, and the guy that he introduced Alicia to was a almost 52-year-old man, Scott Tyree, whose real screen name was Slave Master, and who was into S&M, and who did, in fact, abduct this child and take her to his place in Herndon, Virginia, where she was likely destined to die. When I was testifying before Congress with Justin Berry, the congressional lawmakers asked me, Dr. Cooper, can you help us understand why it is a youth would get in front of a webcam and expose himself and masturbate for people to see? We just don't understand that. And I so wanted to say, really, Your Honor, more adults do this than youth. Why? Because there are more adults than youth, and you are an adult for a whole lot longer than you are a youth. Would you agree? And in fact, more adults do this than youth, but it's not against the law when you're an adult, so that's why we don't have as much information about it as we do with youth. But this whole issue of sexting yet is another component that I know we are going to have to think about with respect to prevention strategies, because we don't want to see our children going to prison because they have committed what really constitutes federal offenses. But, you know, social networking sites can be a place where children don't recognize these harms. And here we have another example of compliant victims. Here is an 18-year-old male who went into Facebook and took over the identity of a girl in his school. He became her. Her pictures were the pictures that were sent to the other students in the school that he began to groom as a girl. As a girl, he was telling these other boys how good-looking they were, how much he wanted to be with them, and he eventually got those boys to send nude pictures of themselves to her, who was really a him. And when they finally met, he coerced these boys to perform sexual acts with him, sometimes in the school bathrooms, in the parking lot, and some of the victims' homes, before he was ever arrested. Compliant victimization is a major issue. And how many of you have children who play video games with auditory headsets? Has anybody even heard of an auditory headset that you play with a video game? Bad sign. Okay, at least one person. All right, so people who play video games, you know, video games, they are played on things like PS2s and Nintendo DSs, the things that you buy for your children but don't ever use, and Xboxes. You've heard of those devices, right? Okay. And there are types of games where your children or you can wear a headset, where you can hear what's happening in the game, and you can talk to people who are playing the game with you. And consequently, you are dialoguing with other people in the game, and you become very excited because you're going to come back and meet those games. Well, that's not a safe place either. For the first time that I'm aware of in this year, we have a young man who managed to groom an 11-year-old girl through a video game. by talking to her in that video game. He convinced her that he cared for her. They were playing on PlayStation 3, and he convinced her to send pictures of herself, nude pictures of herself, to him. She is 11, and she finally blew the whistle when he tried to have an offline meeting with this young girl that he was playing video games with online. Second Life. How many are familiar with Second Life? Great. That's excellent. Well, there is a site in Second Life. Well, first of all, it was in 2007 that Second Life, which has many, many virtual communities. You can be a guitar player. You can be a disco star. You can be a hockey star. You can go into whatever community you want to. However, it was in 2007 that Second Life decided to add a new community, and that community was a pedophilic community. So you now could make yourself as an avatar into a pedophile and dialogue with other pedophiles in Second Life. Well, they also had a site in Second Life called Age Play. Emily Semaphore, here's the character. This is this well-known character, avatar in Second Life. It's actually a 35-year-old, and she works as a librarian. But in Second Life, she role-plays a 13-year-old girl. And along with her real-life husband, whom she met in Second Life, she manages a site called Jailbait. Jailbait is a Second Life club devoted to age play, often involving cyber sex between the participants. And they are interviewing her regarding why it is, as an adult woman, she would want to play the role of a 13-year-old girl. And she admits that she was, in fact, sexually abused as a 13-year-old girl, and therefore she wants to have this site so that other people can approach her and seek to seduce her, and she can do away with it, and that's her healing process. The landscape for our children today also includes commercial sexual exploitation of children, and there probably isn't anything that is as so gut-wrenching as we have seen in the last few days on national media of Shania Davis, who is from my neighborhood. She lived not 3 miles from where I lived. A 5-year-old girl whose mother was drug addicted, whose father had had a, quote, one-night stand with her, who had been raised by this father's sister and who was taken, actually used to pay for drugs, according to the investigation, and sexually assaulted and murdered. Sexual violence is preventable, but we need to be thinking about how to keep children safe. Parents who market their children on the internet, a father using the computer in a public library to send pictures of his 7-year-old daughter out in order to have people to come to his home and have sex with her, a mother who was marketing her adolescent teenage daughter to men that she had met on the internet, one of whom was a pediatrician in San Francisco. And yet, the marketing of the whole issue of commercial sexploitation is very alive and well. This is Madonna, and she is marketing, I know you could miss it, she's marketing the purse. Could you miss that? But it is a Louis Vuitton purse, so okay, let's just get that there. She's marketing both the purse and the shoes, both made by Louis Vuitton. And this picture was on the Louis Vuitton store in Honolulu, Hawaii, when I was there to do a training on commercial sexual exploitation of children. So, of course, rabid as I am, I had to get the picture. Second Life also has a place for marketing children. It is a, you can't, your child, well, here's the chat. My name is Naughty Shan. I am a very young little girl, and with help from my dad, I am an escort. Can only do house visits for men and women. Pay up front, and you get your money's worth, as I have been taught well by daddy. And here's how you join for your Linden dollars of however much money you choose to play in order to have sex with a child in Second Life as a person who is going to be a pedophile. But the selling of children by parents is not a fantasy. That is not a virtual phenomenon. Most recently, this year, a Duke University health policy professor, you recall the case, was found guilty, or actually just arrested, for having sold his 5-year-old adopted son, for sex. His online name was Perv Dad for Fun. That was his online name. And it was very clear that he appeared to have adopted this child as an infant for the purpose of ultimate sexual exploitation. And yet we have marketing that looks at children as well appropriate for sexual issues. Who needs credit cards? And the whole pimps and hoes culture that got Don Imus in trouble but had been around for a whole lot longer than he got into trouble. We see the imagery in all types of marketing campaigns, and not even in campaigns, in literature. This is anime and manga, which children read all the time and which they love, and these are some of their characters who are, for all the world, depicted as if they're commercially sexually exploited. The literature that is and research that continues to be done with respect to music videos, and what do they actually, how do they impact children? Right, one study out of Emory University, which is cited a lot, talks about the fact that when children listen to greater than 3 hours a day of music videos, especially music videos that are sexually explicit, they're 3 times more likely to assault a teacher, 2 times more likely to be arrested, 2 times more likely to have multiple sexual partners, and 1.5 times more likely to acquire a sexually transmitted disease and to use drugs and alcohol. And the RAND study in 2006 that said, when we looked at 12 to 17-year-olds, a broad study of kids around the United States, asking the question of whether or not what you're looking at has degrading lyrics. Okay, they're all sexually explicit, so let's talk about the ones that have degrading lyrics. Did that change behavior? And what they found was that, yes, those kids who listened to music videos that had more degrading lyrics had a much younger age of onset of sexual intercourse and oral sex. Go a step further to the Liz Claiborne research that shows that the younger you are when you have your first sexual encounter, the much higher your risk that you will be a victim of teen dating violence. And put that all together when we think about the mirror neurons and what is happening with respect to our children. Those who write about specific groups, such as African Americans, Dr. John Edward Cole, for example, writes about how hip-hop music really promotes such sex violence and disrespect of women, and how this is so hard to undo. Think back for a minute of some of the things that I've said. Compliant victimization, mirror neurons, younger age of puberty and sexual development. How can we help our children not have these as their role models? How can we help our children recognize listening, looking? Remember, music used to be heard, but now music is seen. And when you think about all of those dynamics, it will help us to understand a little bit better why it is that you can go to a 7-Eleven store and buy this energy drink, which says that pimp juice is your mojo, your it factor. It works with women of every color, creed, and kind from 50 down to 9. You'll understand when your kids go to Macy's in order to buy clothes here modeled on a young girl, that here is a very famous silhouette that we see on the back of 18-wheelers, right? The same clothing line, Apple Bottoms, Apple Bottoms. I know you could miss it, so I thought I'd make sure you could see. This is how it's marketed. It is very important for us to know that when we think about the normalization of sexual harm, just from the standpoint of interpersonal relationships to the extreme of commercial sexual exploitation, the medical student, if you recall, who killed his second victim, he didn't kill the first victim, but the second victim that they're aware of that he had found marketed on Craigslist. Yet, here's Britney Spears with her top seller, Gimme More, where she dances and sings about how's the best way to become a pole dancer and how to be a stripper. And let us not remember Gossip Girls and the whole issue of the threesome that just recently was on TV on CWT as a real concern on the part of the Parents Council. And Lee Jeans Corporation, which markets Lee Jeans, this one in Australia, where the images of adults made to look like children, as you can see, are all being exploited in this manner by a photographer, especially in this manner. Here's the photographer in bed with one of the models, made to look like a child. It is the jeans that's being marketed, in case you couldn't guess that. Same company that makes the very same kinds of jeans that our city councilman was talking about with words over the butt, the whole juicy couture issue. Recognize that these are some of the things that we are concerned about, because our children go from this kind of advertising to this kind of behavior, the whole issue of hooking up. And nothing could be better demonstrated than the Calvin Klein campaign that just recently was in the media as well. And this could easily be your daughter away at school who is thinking this is what is normal. This is how I should be and how those boys should be. Women's magazines that say 10 best places to meet a black man and number 5 is in a strip club. This caused me great consternation when I saw this in Essence magazine. Today we are going to talk about prevention, and I want to say that there are many ways in which we can really think about prevention, but I'll just give you a few that come from my thought process. One, I think that we should have universal internet safety, and I don't just mean this is how you should click and this is what you should delete, but true internet safety. This is how you should stay away from things, and it should be taught in schools in 3 different places, because redundancy is important for children to learn in school health classes, in physical education, and in computer science classes all the time. This is a much higher frequency issue than looking both ways when you cross the street. I'm going to hate to tell you this. We should have movie trailers on DVDs and in theaters that talk about sexual violence prevention. Remember when they had movie trailers about using cocaine and it usually was an egg that was being scrambled up in a skillet. Do you remember that? And see, those mirror neurons are still working because you remember that a long time later. And you spent your money to get into that theater. You had to sit through that first, but it does get into your brain when you see it. Telecommunication companies should provide parental guidelines on cell phone cameras. How do I disable it if I want to? How do I find out if my child is doing anything that I'm worried about? Parents don't have any opportunities right now, and they're the ones paying the bills. Proactive marketing to consumers of women and youth for sexual exploitation to attempt to decrease the demand. Not just let's go and reach in the juvenile detention centers and help children after they've already been arrested. Let's not just go and see if we can try to find these pimps or traffickers, but the bigger market by far are the clients, also known as dates. Those are the groups that we need to be speaking to and whom we need to say. And most of all, never say never in this effort of sexual violence prevention. It is very important for us.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CalCASA.org.